Using a pouch, be sure the top of the pouch doesn't touch a used spoon when you're squeezing out the food. After you've taken a serving out of a jar or pouch, recap the remainder and refrigerate until it's needed again. If juices and fruits haven't been used within 3 days, and everything else within 2 days, toss them. Have a hard time keeping track of what you opened when? Start labeling. Try to mix only one serving at a time of baby cereal. It's fast and easy, so no need to prep in advance. Though if you've made more than baby can eat, assuming you haven't double-dipped a spoon that's been in baby's mouth, you can store it in the refrigerator for a few hours. Longer than that, and it gets too thick and dry. It's not necessary to heat baby food. Baby won't care if it's room temperature or cold, and it's an extra step you can easily skip. But if you do, heat only enough for one meal and discard any uneaten, heated portion. You can place the baby food in a heat-resistant dish over simmering water or place the pouch in hot water to warm it, but you'll have to throw out any leftovers once the pouch has been warmed. Or less ideally, you can use the microwave, keeping these important caveats in mind. First, make sure the dish is microwave safe. Second, heat for only 5 seconds, then stir, and test the temperature of the food on your wrist. If it's still cold, heat for another 5 seconds, then stir, then test, continuing with this pattern until the food is slightly warm. Keep in mind that though the container may stay cool, the contents continue to heat for a few minutes after you take it out of the microwave, and may be hot enough to burn baby's mouth. When preparing fresh baby foods, be sure utensils and work surfaces are clean. Keep cold foods cold and warm foods warm. Don't keep opened food at room temperature for more than an hour. Cook eggs well before serving. Raw or undercooked eggs can harbor salmonella. To be extra safe, you can use pasteurized eggs. Make sure all juice, milk, cheese, and other dairy products you serve your baby are pasteurized, never raw, to prevent bacterial infection. When tasting during food preparation, use a fresh spoon each time you taste, or wash the spoon between tastings. When in doubt about the freshness of a food, throw it out. When out and about, carry any open jars, pouches, or containers of anything that needs refrigeration in an insulated bag packed with ice or an ice pack if it will be more than an hour before you serve it. Once the food no longer feels cool, you'll have to toss it. Better still, pack unopened food that doesn't require refrigeration. But be careful never to store it in extreme temperatures, like in a hot car.
First Foods and Beyond. It's chow time, baby. While everyone agrees that the perfect first liquid for baby is mother's milk, there's no consensus on the perfect first solid. Should it be whole grain oatmeal or brown rice cereal? Perhaps it's best to start with veggies, or maybe fruit is the way to go at first. Something obvious, like sweet potatoes, or something less conventional, like avocado. Though there's no one right answer, there are some that are better than others, so it's always best to ask the doctor to recommend a first food. No matter what's on the menu, the texture of your baby's very first spoon-fed solids should be super smooth and practically dripping off the spoon. Strained, pureed, or finely mashed foods, thinned with breast milk or formula, as needed. That is, unless you're opting to feed solids via the baby-led weaning method. As your tiny gourmand becomes a more experienced eater, gradually reduce the liquid you add, and thicken and then slightly chunk up the texture. Here are some good first food choices. Vegetables. Veggies are tops in nutrition and unlikely to trigger allergies. Start with milder yellow or orange options, such as sweet potatoes, squash, and carrots, before moving on to peas and green beans, which have slightly stronger flavors. If your baby rejects what you've got, try again tomorrow, and the next day, and the next. Some babies need to be introduced to a new food 4 or 5 or more times before they'll accept it. So perseverance is key. Fruit. Delicious, digestible first fruits include mashed or pureed ripe avocado, It's creamy, yummy, and loaded with healthy fats. Finely mashed bananas or baby applesauce, peaches, or pears. Cereal. If you start with baby cereal, pick a single grain, iron-enriched, whole grain variety, like whole grain oat or whole grain barley. If you choose rice cereal, stick with brown rice for the nutrients, but limit it because of its naturally high arsenic levels. To prepare, mix a small amount of baby cereal with formula, breast milk, or even water to create a creamy soup. Don't sweeten the taste by adding things like mashed bananas, applesauce, or juice. First, because it's best to introduce only one food at a time, and second, because it's better for baby to acquire a taste for plain before you sweeten the cereal pot.
Eat well with WIC. If you qualify, the WIC program can help you afford healthy food for your baby. WIC gives eligible moms vouchers to buy healthy food at local supermarkets. Find out more at fns.usda.gov/WIC.
Expanding baby's repertoire. Once your baby is lapping up those first foods, you can expand the menu, but keep these pointers in mind. Stay solo and go slow. Most doctors recommend a one-at-a-time policy when introducing new foods. So unless your baby's doctor has suggested a different course for bringing on different courses, serve up new foods alone or in combo with other foods that have already tested well. Offer a new menu item for 3 to 5 days before you bring on another. That way, if your little one shows signs of an allergy or sensitivity, excessive gassiness, diarrhea or mucus in the stool, vomiting, a rough rash on the face, particularly around the mouth, a runny nose and or watery eyes or wheezing that doesn't seem to be associated with a cold, unusual night wakefulness or daytime crankiness, you'll be able to figure out which food triggered it. No adverse reaction? Then you can keep the item on the menu and move on to the next new food. If you think your baby may be sensitive to something you've served, wait about a week before trying the food again. Though if the reaction was severe, check with the doctor before ever serving that food again. If you get a similar reaction 2 or 3 times in a row, you can probably conclude there's a sensitivity. Eliminate that food from baby's diet for several months, then try it again when your pediatrician gives you the green light. If your baby seems to react to almost every new food you offer, or there's a history of allergies in your family, check in with your doctor. Keep food choices simple and separate. Ready to serve up a combo platter? Go ahead, but keep the selection separate at first, so baby gets to sample each flavor on its own. Mush the peas and carrots together, and your little one may never know the joy of just plain peas. After single foods have been savored, feel free to mix things up. Create your own yummy melange with favorite flavors or try packaged combos in jars or pouches. But read the labels to screen for ingredients your baby isn't ready for, like added sugar or salt. Check the no-serve list. While doctors used to recommend waiting on certain foods until after the first birthday to reduce the risk of allergies, research has shown that introducing highly allergenic foods early may actually prevent allergies. Check with the doctor for a list of green light and red light foods. Most doctors now give the go-ahead on wheat, eggs, chocolate, dairy products, citrus fruits, tomatoes, strawberries, and peanut and nut products at 6 months, while a few say to hold off on some. Definitely off the menu this year are unsafe foods like honey. Foods that can be choking hazards like nuts, chunky nut butters, and raisins, and cow's milk.
No honey for your little honey. Honey may be sweet, but not when it comes to your little sweetie. Honey, or foods made with honey, needs to stay off the menu for the first year because it may contain the spores of Clostridium botulinum, bacteria that is harmless to adults but can cause botulism in babies. This serious, though rarely fatal illness can cause constipation, weaken sucking, poor appetite, and lethargy, and can even lead to pneumonia and dehydration. What you may be wondering about:
getting baby to sleep through the night.
My baby won't go to sleep without my nursing her, and then she still gets up twice a night and won't go back to sleep without more feeds or rocking. Will we ever get any sleep?
Doing the zombie shuffle from your bed to your baby's crib and back again, night after night, can get old fast. But here's the thing. It's not the night waking that's the problem. Even the best snoozers, those who sleep through the night, actually wake up several times during the night. Everybody does. But a lifetime of good sleep for your baby will depend on her learning how to fall asleep and fall back to sleep solo, on her own, unassisted by you. If you're ready to renounce your position as your baby's personal sandman, and your baby's ready, even if she doesn't know it yet, to give up night feeds and a helping hand getting back to sleep, then this is a good time to start sleep teaching, so you and your baby can hang up those midnight calls and dial in a good night's sleep. On the other hand, if you'd like to continue answering baby's calls, or you're just plain opposed to sleep teaching on principle, there's no need to stop. Before you begin sleep teaching, aka sleep training, you'll need to take a close look at baby's sleep habits, including whether she's napping too much or too little during the day. Another important first step will be weaning baby off middle-of-the-night feedings. And if baby's been falling asleep at the breast or bottle, establish a bedtime routine that puts the bedtime feeding before the bath and other rituals and well before she actually needs to fall asleep. That way, you'll be able to put her in the crib awake, which will help her begin the process of learning how to fall asleep on her own, instead of relying on her current sleep crutch, feeding. Sleep teaching will, unfortunately, involve some tears, likely on both sides of the crib, and a certain amount of tough love. But the truth is, for those parents desperate and determined to get that good night's sleep sooner rather than later, letting an older, say 5 or 6 month old baby cry it out, widely known in social media circles as CIO, almost always works. Here's why. By 6 months, babies are wise to the fact that crying often results in being picked up, rocked, fed, or if they're really lucky, all three. Pretty good motivation to keep on wailing. But once they get the message that mom and dad are not buying what they're selling, most will give up the crying game, usually within 3 or 4 nights. If you feel comfortable trying the cried-out method on your baby, and not everyone does, so don't feel obligated to try sleep training if it doesn't feel right for you and your baby, there are 2 things you should know about it. First, it's not as harsh as it sounds, and you can and most definitely should modify the amount of crying you let your baby do to fit your comfort level. Some parents are okay letting baby cry for a set period of time, while other parents will feel more comfortable without prescribed crying times and will prefer to return to baby for a reassuring rub based on gut, not the clock. Second, the crying it out approach is definitely harder on you than it is on your baby. Remember this, especially as you're sitting outside her door, thinking you're the worst parent in the world. A few minutes, or even more than a few minutes, of whimpering, fussing, or even crying to self-soothe won't hurt her in the short or long term, and it definitely won't scar her for life. And ultimately, if you can stand it, you're doing her a favor by helping her learn to fall asleep and fall back to sleep on her own, a life skill she'll need her entire life. Up to sleep training, here's what you do. Watch for those snooze clues. Eye rubbing or a clockwork case of the crankies, for instance, will help clue you in to when your baby is feeling tired. Anticipating your baby's natural sleepy times at both nap time and bedtime will allow you to get your baby into sleep mode before she gets overtired. Being aware of those sleep cues is a crucial step in this process, since overtired babies, ones who skip naps altogether, just catch brief cat naps, or don't get enough sleep at night, have a harder time settling down for daily naps and when it's time to go to bed at night. And they're more likely to sleep fitfully and wake in the wee hours, undermining your sleep training efforts. Initiate the nap time bedtime routine. At bedtime, have a calm and quiet, approximately 30 to 45 minute routine that includes a warm bath, massage, and final feeding before you put your baby down in her crib. While you shouldn't go through the same 30-minute routine at nap time, some sort of a bridge version, a book, a lullaby, and a sweet cuddle or a little massage, for instance, during the day will help signal to your little one that it's nap time and time to sleep. The most important thing to remember about these pre-sleep routines, be consistent and persistent about it. Choose the right sleep location. Lay baby down in her crib or another setting that's conducive to a long sleep. At night, the crib is the most obvious place for sleep, but get into the habit of putting her in the crib or a pack and play for daytime naps as well. There are plenty of reasons why your baby shouldn't get into the habit of sleeping in the stroller or swing for naps, and for sure, not at bedtime. Put baby down awake. Remember, the whole point of sleep teaching is to get your little one to fall asleep on her own. If you rock or nurse her to sleep and then transfer her from your arms to the crib when she's already snoozing, the lesson's not learned. Not to mention that she'll associate falling asleep with being rocked or nursed, and those sleep association habits will be hard to break. The sleep teaching that you're doing will allow her to form new sleep associations, ones that give her the self-soothing tools that will enable her to fall asleep without your help. So put her down awake, give her a gentle rub, then softly recite a consistent goodnight phrase and leave the room. That means leave the room immediately without waiting for her to fall asleep. Cue the crying. You can expect some fussing, and you knew it was coming, crying. And here's where you make the decision to either stay tough and continue with the sleep teaching or choose a different path. If you want to sleep teach, there will be crying. There are different ways to respond to the crying, but if you think there's no way you can stand by for even a moment while your precious one wails, then sleep training isn't for you. Respond or not. Now that your baby is crying, there are a few ways you can respond. Some experts suggest you let your baby cry until she tires herself out and falls asleep from exhaustion. Others suggest you set a time limit on the crying. A full 5 minutes, it'll seem much longer, for instance, before you go back in. Or you can be less regimented about sticking to a clock and go with your gut instead. Perhaps your gut is telling you to respond after 2 minutes, for instance. When you do go back in, repeat the original routine. A quick pat, a gentle goodnight, a phrase that reminds her it's time to go to sleep. Replace the pacifier, if you use one, and go. It may be better for dad to head in at this point if mom is associated with feedings and comfort. Another variation on the same concept, which works better for some older babies and is more comfortable for some parents, is to reassure your baby from a chair near her crib until she falls asleep each evening, again, without picking her up. Move the chair a little farther away each night until you're at the doorway. Finally, move out the door, at which point baby should be able to fall asleep without you present. Keep in mind, however, that for some babies, parents won't be out of mind unless they're out of sight. In that case, this approach will definitely not work. And repeat. Repeat the process you've chosen for as long as baby cries, extending the time you leave her alone by about 5 minutes, or again, what your gut says, each time until she falls asleep. Stretch the time she spends on her own by a few more minutes the second night, and again on the third. Keep in mind that sleep teaching at nap time will have to be slightly modified, since 30 minutes of crying And there goes baby's nap time. Consider setting a limit of a total of 10 or 15 minutes of crying and responding, for instance, before resorting to giving up on the nap altogether or using another means of getting baby to sleep. The good news is by the end of the first week of nighttime sleep teaching, nap time should be smoother as your little one comes to understand that when she's placed in her crib, it's time to sleep. Reap the reward. You'll likely find your baby's crying jags diminish steadily over 3 nights and, drumroll please, virtually disappear somewhere between the 4th and 7th night, replaced perhaps by a bit of fussing or short bursts of tears. The next sound you're likely to hear, nothing, except maybe a tiny, blissful snore. Sure, there'll be plenty of nights, even after the initial sleep teaching period, when your baby will fuss, perhaps loudly, or cry even louder at first. But give it a chance. Once your baby learns how to soothe herself to sleep each night, and almost all babies do in time, perhaps by sucking her thumb or a pacifier, or by rocking herself, turning her head or changing position, or even by whimpering, she'll be able to drift off to dreamland solo at bedtime, and drift back to dreamland when she wakes during the night. And mission sleep teach will be accomplished. Does that mean you'll never face another night of broken sleep? Maybe, maybe not. There may be nights, even after your sweetie has started to sleep through the night, when she'll put up a sleep fuss. Whether it's a case of sleep regression, common when a baby's busy trying to conquer a new skill, or just a case of temporary teething pain, avoid sliding back into old routines of rocking or nursing, which will undermine all the hard work you both did. Instead, sticking to the consistent strategy that helped her sleep train in the first place will help ease her over this bedtime blip.
For more Z's, try C for consistency. Last night, you toughed out 20 minutes of crying, but tonight, you're worn down after 2. Tomorrow is another night, after all. Understandable. You're only human, and you're a sleep-deprived human at that. But unfortunately, inconsistency will get you nowhere when it comes to sleep teaching. So give the strategy a chance to work before you conclude it's not working. If you don't stick with it long enough to see a difference, you'll never know whether the method's a failure or your follow-through is. Stick with it consistently for a solid 2 weeks before you give up entirely. Watch your response time. CIO isn't your MO or even in your DNA. Still, try not to rush to baby's side at the first whimper. Babies make all kinds of noises, including crying, or even wake momentarily during the light phase of sleep, only to fall back to sleep on their own. Others whimper regularly and briefly before settling down for the night or during night wakenings as a way of comforting themselves. If you come a-running, you may actually be waking your about-to-nod-off baby, and that's not in anyone's best interest. So unless there's some full-fledged wailing coming from that crib, wait a few minutes to see if your little snoozer drifts back to dreamland solo. Worked up and throwing up. You've committed to sleep training and are prepared for the crying that comes with it. But what happens when what starts as crying ends up with throwing up? It's true that a small number of babies get so worked up from crying that they actually vomit. Clearly, crying-induced vomiting is a laundry concern and a case for waterproof crib mattress covers, but happily, it isn't generally a health concern. So, what to do? You can stick with the plan, allowing for cleanups, of course, for 3 or 4 days to see if the throwing up lets up, which it usually does. If it doesn't, or you're not up to the midnight cleanups, you could put sleep training efforts on hold for a few weeks. Then try again to see if the vomiting reoccurs or not. You may also want to consider whether feeding your little one too much too close to bedtime might be triggering the upchucks. Try switching the order of the bedtime routine so breast or bottle, or any bedtime snacks, comes at the beginning instead of the end. And of course, to rule out any medical concerns, check in with the doctor if the vomiting continues. sleeping through the night together. Don't feel the need to push the independent sleep agenda so soon or to give up night feedings yet. Not a fan of letting your baby cry even a little. Prefer to have your precious bundle positioned conveniently beside you rather than having to drag yourself out of bed to dispense doses of comfort. Believe that happiness in the middle of the night is a warm baby. Another strategy for getting your baby to sleep through the night is arguably, at least in the short term, the easiest of them all, sleeping together. What else is in it for you and baby? Proponents say it's the best way to foster positive sleep associations and discourage negative ones. The presence of parents, their touch, smell, and sound gives babies a reassuring message that falling asleep or resettling back into deep sleep is safe and secure. Instead of fearing them, so the theory goes, bed-sharing babies come to embrace sleep and the dark. Sharing a bed with your baby doesn't mean that you're giving up on the idea of independent sleeping entirely. All kids eventually learn to sleep on their own, and some do so voluntarily by the time they're three. Just that you're shelving it until you and baby feel ready to tackle it. Do keep in mind, however, that some bed sharers have a harder time weaning themselves off the nighttime company than others. Also remember that it's always best for both parents to be on board the co-sleeping bed, which can start to get crowded when the little one isn't so little anymore or is a restless sleeper. While there are plenty of positives to sleep sharing, there can also be risks if you don't follow these rules for safe bed sharing. Make sure your mattress is firm. Keep comforters and pillows away from baby. Make sure there are no cracks or crevices baby could get stuck in, like between the mattress and the wall or the headboard. Never smoke in or near bed. And never share a bed with baby after you've been drinking or have taken a sedative. It's all in the timing. One major change or stress in your baby's life at a time is plenty. If baby's already dealing with one, whether it's teething, mom going back to work, a new babysitter, or a bout with a stuffy nose or an ear infection, wait until things have settled down again before launching any sleep through the night campaign. It makes sense to wait also if you're planning a family trip in the near future. Travel is almost certain to derail your efforts. Keep in mind that even babies who have mastered sleeping through the night may begin waking again during times of change or stress, or after a disruption of schedule during a trip or a busy holiday season. Night waking may also start up again when a baby has just passed a major developmental milestone, such as learning to crawl or walk, since baby's compulsion to practice the new skill may interfere temporarily with sleep. A refresher course of sleep teaching may be all your little one needs to get back to sleep business as usual.
What will the neighbors think?
We live in an apartment, and our baby's room shares a wall with the next apartment. We'd like to try some sleep teaching, but we're honestly afraid of what the neighbors will think about her crying.
It's hard enough for you to listen to your baby crying in the middle of the night. But what about the neighbors? If you live in an apartment or otherwise within earshot of the folks next door, letting your little one cry for any amount of time during the night may seem decidedly unneighborly. Here's how to make a sleeper out of your baby without making enemies out of your neighbors. Give fair warning. Let your neighbors know what's in store ahead of time, rather than at 3 a.m. when they call to complain. Tell them your plan to teach baby how to sleep through the night by letting her cry for short periods each night, and how long you think it will take, hopefully not more than a week. Apologize in advance, and if that doesn't work, buy forgiveness. Chances are they won't be thrilled at the prospect of broken sleep. After all, broken sleep comes with your territory as new parents, not theirs. Neighbors who have little ones of their own and have done their own share of walking the floor with screaming infants may be empathetic and may even offer some coping suggestions. Other neighbors may be less understanding, and who can blame them? Apologies may be accepted more graciously if accompanied by a small, disturbing the peace offering. A bottle of wine, a basket of fruit and cheese, a box of chocolates, or in tough cases, all three. If your neighbors have a sense of humor, which hopefully they do, you might offer up a set of earplugs or a pair of earmuffs. Close the windows. Make sure a baby's cries can't travel out an open window and down the street. Take some muffling measures. Hang blankets on the wall in baby's room or over any windows that are adjacent to the neighbor's. If possible, put baby's crib in a carpeted room or place an area rug under it to better insulate sound. Don't feel too bad. Some amount of noise comes with apartment or townhouse living. Chances are you've put up with your share of yapping dogs, slamming doors, midnight footsteps, blaring music, and crack of dawn vacuum cleaners. A good neighbor, hopefully the kind you have, will be just as tolerant of your crying baby. A bedtime routine.
We'd like to give our baby boy a bedtime routine, but we're not sure how to go about it.
Whether you're co-sleeping or sleep teaching, every good night's sleep begins with a good bedtime routine. A predictable, comforting sequence of nightly activities when it's nearly time for bed will give your baby a heads up that it's time to put his sweet little head down, gently leading him to the land of nodding off. It bridges that transition from the buzz of the day to the lull of the night, helping your increasingly busy little one go from 60 to zero with less fuss. What's more, a lot more, a bedtime routine provides a chance to bond with your little bundle at the end of a long day. After all, the time spent snuggling, singing lullabies, and quietly reading are some of the coziest and calmest you'll get to spend with your baby. To allow enough time for a satisfying and successful bedtime routine, get things rolling about 30 to 45 minutes before you'd ideally like your little one to hit the sheets. Though bedtime routines should be consistent from night to night, you can be flexible in developing one that works for you and your baby, incorporating all or some of the following. But first things first, get ready to get your baby sleepy. Creating a sleep-inducing atmosphere. Dimming the lights, turning off the TV, powering down the phone will help set a relaxing tone. Then move on to a bath. After a day of cleaning the floor with his knees, massaging his scalp with mashed banana, and rolling in the grass, baby probably needs a bath. But the evening bath does more than get a baby clean. It's also relaxing. Warm, soothing waters wield magical sleep-inducing powers, so don't waste them by giving baby a bath earlier in the day. You might also want to try baby bedtime bath wash or lotion enriched with lavender and chamomile, known for their soothing and relaxing properties. A massage. If your baby enjoys a good rub, now would be a great time to relax him with one. Research shows that babies who are massaged before bed produce more of the sleep-inducing hormone, melatonin. Use a soothing scented oil or lotion for extra sleepy benefits. Breastfeeding or a bottle of formula. A nightcap can fill your baby's tummy till morning. Don't forget to brush baby's teeth if he has any afterward, or to wipe them with a tooth wipe or washcloth. If your baby tends to fall asleep during this feeding, and you'd rather he didn't, do it a bit earlier, such as before the bath, and keep the noise and activity level high. Later, when your baby is closer to the end of the first year, you can opt to add a bedtime snack. A story. After your baby's been diapered and pajamaed, settle down together into a glider, a comfortable chair, or the sofa with a book or two and some snuggles. Any book will do, but bedtime classics like Goodnight Moon or Guess How Much I Love You often become family favorites. Read in a soft, soothing tone rather than a lively, animated voice. Or just look at the pictures together. A song, a cuddle. Sing quiet songs and lullabies, cuddle, but save rougher fun such as I'm going to get you kissing games or tickling sessions for daytime. After all, once baby's motor is turned on, it's hard to turn off. goodbyes. Take a goodnight tour, saying night-night to stuffed animals, siblings, mommy, and daddy. Share goodnight kisses all around. Say, I love you, or goodnight, sleep tight, or anything else you'd like to say. Just make it short, sweet, and predictable. Put baby down tenderly, stroke his hair or cheek gently for a moment or two, add a few quiet rounds of shh, and then make your exit, unless you're all going to sleep together.
For parents, baby's sleeping through. How about you? It's perhaps one of parenting's greatest ironies. No sooner than baby starts sleeping through the night, than you're up all night with insomnia. It doesn't happen to every sleep-deprived parent who suddenly scores the ultimate baby sleep prize, sleeping through the night, but it happens. And if it's happening to you, you might be ready to try crying yourself to sleep, if only you could. Post-sleep teaching insomnia seems inherently unfair, but it also makes sense, at least biologically. While you were busy setting your baby's sleep habits straight, you were also busy wreaking havoc on your own, throwing your internal clock for a loop of sleeplessness. Add in the lighter sleep you've become accustomed to since your demanding bundle of joy arrived, and it's no wonder you're lying in bed waiting for whimpers and wails that never come, and a sandman who never arrives. Happily, you can straighten out your own sleep habits using some of the same tricks you use to straighten out your little ones. Most important will be a bedtime routine. Instead of falling into bed, as natural an inclination as it is for new parents, ease yourself into it. Dim the lights, play soft music, take a warm bath, have a light snack with a milk chaser, which actually helps you catch those Z's faster. Have sex or some quiet cuddles with your big sweetie. Anything you find relaxing. Taking a magnesium supplement, which relaxes your muscles, can also help summon slumber. Try to avoid TV, tablets, your phone, anything that might wire you and that emits a bright light for about 30 to 60 minutes before bed. Some research suggests that bright light exposure before sleep can disrupt body rhythms and suppress the release of melatonin, the sleep-promoting hormone. Be consistent in the hour you begin your bedtime routine and the order in which you play it out, just as you are with your baby, so your body begins to get acclimated to the idea that the routine will end in sleep. And though it may seem obvious, skip the caffeine in the afternoon and evening hours. It can stay in your system for as long as 8 hours, fueling that frustrating cycle of sleeplessness.
Still using a pacifier.
Should I be taking the pacifier away now that my baby is 6 months old, before she gets too attached?
There's no need to give up the binky at bedtime. In fact, it's a good idea for baby to be put to bed with her pacifier, since research has shown that this may reduce the risk of SIDS. But it might make sense to start limiting pacifier use to when your sweetie's sleeping. This way, it won't interfere with socializing and vocalizing during the day. And start thinking ahead. While it isn't necessary to wean your baby off the passy at her first birthday, use of it isn't likely to harm teeth until age 2 to 3, it's definitely an opportune time to ditch the binky for good. As you've guessed, the more entrenched the passy habit is, the harder it is to kick. Early rising.
At first, we were grateful that our son was sleeping through the night. With him waking up like clockwork at 5 every morning, we almost wish he'd wake up in the middle of the night instead.
With a night waker, at least there's a promise of another few hours of sleep once baby settles down again. But with a baby who greets his parents alert and energetic, ready and eager to start every day, when even the roosters are still snoozing, there's no hope of further rest until night falls once more. Let's just say it's a rude awakening. It probably isn't realistic to expect your baby to sleep in past 6 or 7, at least not until he's a teenager, at which point you'll probably have to drag him out of bed each morning just to get him to school on time. But it may be possible to reset your little alarm clock at least a bit later. Keep out the dawn's early light. Some babies, like some adults, are particularly sensitive to light when they're sleeping. Especially when the days are longer, keeping baby's room dark can buy a little extra sleep for everyone. Invest in room darkening shades or lined curtains to prevent an early sunrise from waking baby. Keep the traffic out. If your baby's window faces a street with a lot of traffic in the early morning hours, the noise could be waking him too soon. Try keeping his window closed, hanging a heavy blanket or curtain at the window to help muffle sound, or moving him, if possible, to an off-street room. Or use a fan or white noise machine to drown out street noises. Keep baby up later at night. Sometimes too early to bed, say 6 p.m., can mean too early to rise. So try putting your baby to bed 10 minutes later each night until you've gradually postponed his bedtime an hour or more. To make this work, it will probably help to move his naps and meals forward simultaneously and at the same pace. On the other hand, sometimes a too late bedtime can result, paradoxically, in a too early riser. If that seems to be the case with your little one, try a somewhat earlier bedtime. Keep baby up later during the day. Some early risers are ready to go back to sleep in an hour or two. Early naps lead to early bedtime, which inevitably continues the cycle of early waking. To break the cycle, postpone baby's return to the crib by 10 minutes more each morning until he's napping an hour or so later, which may eventually help him to extend his night's sleep. Keep naps down. A baby needs only so much total sleep, an average of 14 and a half hours at this age, with wide variations in individual babies. Maybe yours is getting too much sleep during the day and thus needs less sleep at night. Limit daytime naps, cutting one out or shortening all of them. But don't cut out so much daytime sleep that your baby's actually overtired and less likely to sleep well by bedtime. And if he seems not to be napping enough during the day, consider that the key to longer night sleeps might be longer day sleeps. Keep him waiting. Don't rush to greet him at the first call from the crib. Wait 5 minutes first. If you're lucky, he may cuddle up and go back to sleep, or at least amuse himself while you catch a few more moments of rest. Have entertainment standing by. If keeping the room dark doesn't help, try letting a little light seep through so that he can play while he waits for you. An attached crib soother, crib mirror, or crib keyboard may keep him busy for a few minutes. Keep him waiting for breakfast. If he's used to eating at 5:30 a.m., hunger will continue to be his early wake-up call and yours. Gradually postpone the first feed by a few minutes each day so that he's less likely to wake up early for it. Tried it all, but your baby still won't sleep in. It may be your baby's just an early morning person, even if you are definitely not. In that case, you may have no choice but to rise, if not shine, early too. That is, at least until he's old enough to get up and make his own breakfast. Flipping during the night.
I always put my baby on her back to sleep. But now that she knows how to roll over, she flips over and sleeps on her stomach. Should I keep flipping her back?
Now that your baby has learned to flip, there's no point in trying to keep her on her back. And happily, no reason to worry if you can't. Experts agree that a baby who's able to change positions easily is at a significantly decreased risk for SIDS. That's because the high-risk period for SIDS has generally passed by the time a baby can turn over. It may also be because a baby who has developed the strength and mobility to roll onto her tummy has developed the maturity to sense trouble when she's sleeping, and she's better equipped to protect herself from whatever it is about tummy sleeping that increases SIDS risk. You can, and according to experts, you should keep putting your baby to bed on her back until her first birthday. But don't lose any sleep over her position if it changes during the night, or even as soon as you've put her down. Be sure, however, that her crib is safe, Continue to follow the tips for preventing SIDS, such as using only a firm mattress and avoiding pillows, blankets, bumpers, comforters, and plush toys. Bathing in the big tub.
Our baby is far too big now for his infant tub, but I'm nervous about washing him in our bathtub. And he seems to be too. The one time I tried it, he screamed so much, I had to take him out. So now what?
Taking the plunge into the family bathtub, especially a deep soaking tub, may seem an intimidating step for both baby and you. After all, he's still such a little and slippery fish for such a big pond. But if you're careful about preventing accidents and easing baby's fears and yours, the big tub can turn into a water wonderland for an older baby, and bath time into a favorite, if wet, family ritual. To make sure the transition to deeper waters is smooth sailing for baby, check out the tips in the newborn chapter on baby care basics and try the following. Let your baby test the waters in a familiar boat. For a few nights before he graduates from it, bathe him in his baby tub placed in the empty grown-up tub, if you haven't already. This way, the big tub won't seem quite so big when it's filled with water and him. Take a dry run. If he's sitting well and is willing, put him in the tub on a large bath towel or a safe bath seat so he doesn't slip, without water and with a pile of toys. That way, he can become used to the tub while it's dry and hopefully discover how much fun playing in it can be. If the room is warm enough and he's a baby who doesn't mind being naked, let him play in there undressed. Otherwise, keep his clothes on. If he seems reluctant, try climbing into the tub with him to keep him company. As in any bathtub situation, don't leave his side for a moment. Use a stand-in. While someone else holds baby, give a demonstration bath to a washable doll in the bathtub with a comforting running commentary each step of the way. Make it look as if everybody involved is having a good time. Test the waters. Don't go deep. The water should come up to waist high for baby when he's sitting. The temperature should be warm, but not hot. A bath thermometer is the easiest way to ensure a comfortable and safe temperature. Avoid the big chill. Babies dislike being cold, and if they associate being chilled with being bathed, they may balk at bathing. So be sure that the bathroom is comfortably warm. If it's too chilly, you can try steaming it up first by running a hot shower. Don't remove baby's clothes until the tub is filled and you're ready to slip him into it. Have a large soft towel, hooded is best, ready to wrap him in as soon as you lift him from the water. Dry baby thoroughly, being sure to get into the creases before unwrapping and dressing him. Launch a fleet of fun. Make sure the tub is a floating playground for your baby so that he'll be diverted while you take care of bathing business. Specially designed tub toys, particularly those that bob atop the water like a rubber ducky, and bath books are great, but you don't need pricey water toys to make a splash. Plastic containers of all shapes and sizes will provide a boatload of fun. To avoid mildew buildup on tub toys, towel them off after use and store them in a dry container or a mesh bag. Clean water-retaining bath toys at least once a week with a mixture of one part bleach to 15 parts water. Be sure to rinse well to reduce any buildup of bacteria or mold. Let baby make a splash. For most babies, splashing is a large part of bath time fun. And the wetter a baby can make you, the happier he'll be. But while he'll almost certainly like to make a splash, he may not like to be the target of one. Every baby is different, but many have been turned off to the tub with a single playful splash. Use a buddy system. Some babies are more amenable to a bath if they've got company. Try climbing into the tub with your baby, but at bath temperatures geared to his comfort. Once he becomes adjusted to these baths for two, you can try him solo. No swimming right after eating. It makes sense not to bathe your baby directly after meals because the increase in handling and activity could cause spit-ups. Don't pull the sopper until baby is out of the tub. Not only can it be a physically chilling experience to be in an emptying tub, it can be psychologically chilling too. The gurgling sound can frighten even a young infant, and an older baby or toddler who sees the water rushing down the drain may fear that he's going down next. Be patient. Eventually, your little minnow will take to the tub, but he'll do it faster if he's allowed to do it at his own pace and without parental pressure.
Safe big bath bathing. To make sure tubby time is not only fun but safe, follow these important tips. Wait until baby's a sitting duck. You'll both be more comfortable with big tub bathing if your baby's capable of sitting unassisted or with only minimal support. Take a safe seat. A wet baby is a slippery baby, and even a solid sitter can take a slide in the tub. And though a momentary slip under the water wouldn't be physically harmful, it could generate a longer-term fear of baths. Of course, if he slips and you're not there, the consequences could be much more serious. Though most experts recommend against using a bath seat for safety's sake, some parents choose to use one as an alternative to the old one hand on baby at all times maneuver. If you do decide to use a bath seat, be sure you use one that meets the safety standards issued by the Consumer Product Safety Commission, CPSC, in 2010. These tougher standards include stricter stability requirements to prevent the bath seat from tipping over, tighter leg openings to prevent children from slipping through, and a larger, permanent warning label alerting parents and caregivers that bath seats are not safety devices and that infants should never be left unattended in a bath seat. If you're not using a bath seat, be sure the tub bottom is lined with a rubber tub mat or skid-proof stick-ons to prevent slipping. Wet baby bottoms are slippery bottoms. Be prepared. Towel, washcloth, baby wash, shampoo, tub toys, and anything else you'll need for baby's bath should be on hand before you put baby in the tub. If you do forget something and you have to get it yourself, bundle baby in a towel and take him or her with you. Also prepare by removing everything from tub side that's potentially dangerous in baby's curious hands, such as soap, razors, and adult body wash and shampoo, not to mention sponges and products used for cleaning the tub. Be there. Your baby needs adult supervision every moment of every bath and will continue to for the first 5 years of bathing. Never leave your little one in the tub unattended, even in a baby seat, even for a second. He or she could slip out or climb out. Keep this startling statistic in mind when the phone or doorbell rings, a pot boils over on the stove, or anything else threatens to take your attention away from your baby. 55% of accidental infant drownings take place in the bathtub. Don't overfill. Water should come to baby's waist when sitting. Do the elbow test. Your relatively toughened up hands are much more tolerant of heat than a baby's sensitive skin. So test the water with a bath thermometer, your elbow, or the inside of your wrist before dunking baby. While it should be comfortably warm, it should not be hot. Turn the hot water tap off first so that any drips from the faucet will be cold and baby won't be scalded. Setting the hot water at 120 degrees or below will also prevent scalds. A safety cover on the tub spout will protect baby from burns and bumps.
Bottle rejection in a breastfed baby.
I'd like to give my baby an occasional bottle of pumped milk to free me up a little, but she refuses to drink it. What can I do?
Your baby wasn't born yesterday, and unlike a relative newcomer, she's developed a strong sense of what she wants, what she doesn't want, and how she can best go about getting things her way. What she wants, your nice, soft, warm nipples. What she doesn't want, a factory-made substitute. How she can best go about getting things her way, crying for the former and rejecting the latter. Waiting this long to introduce a bottle into your baby's life has turned the odds against you, the introduction is better made no later than 6 weeks. But it's still possible that you'll be able to win her over by following these tips. Feed her on an empty stomach. Many babies will be more receptive to the bottle as a source of food when they're in the market for something to eat. So try offering the bottle when your baby is really hungry. She may just take the bottle bait. Or feed her on a full stomach. With some babies, offering a bottle when they're looking for a breast just plain makes them mad. If this is the case with your baby, and you'll find out only through trial and rejection, don't offer the bottle when she's at her hungriest. Instead, offer it casually between nursings. She may be more in the mood to experiment and more open to a snack. Don't let her see you sweat. Instead of acting as though there's a lot at stake, even if there is, act as if the bottle issue is no biggie, no matter what her response. Let her play before she eats. Before attempting to get down to business with the bottle, let her get her hands on it. If she's had a chance to explore it on her own, she may be more likely to let it into her life and hopefully into her mouth. She may even put it there herself, as she does everything else. Banish your breast and the rest of you when the bottle is launched. A breastfed baby is more likely to accept a bottle from those lacking lactation equipment. In other words, anyone but mom. It may also help if you and your breasts are out of smelling distance. At least until bottle feeding is well established, even the sound of your voice may spoil baby's appetite for a bottle. Try a favorite fluid. It's possible that baby's objecting not to the bottle, but to the fluid inside it. Some infants will take to a bottle better if it's filled with familiar breast milk, but others, reminded of breast milk's original source, are more open to another beverage. If your baby's doctor has okayed water, give that a whirl first. Be sneaky. Have your bottle giver pick up your sleeping baby and try to offer the bottle then. After a few weeks, your little stubborn bottle snubber may open wide when wide awake too. Know when to surrender, temporarily. Don't let the bottle become the object of a battle, or your side doesn't stand a chance of winning. As soon as your baby raises objections to the bottle, take it away. Again, like you could care less, and try again another day, and then another. Offer the bottle once every few days for at least a couple of weeks before you consider giving up entirely. Even if your baby never ends up budging on the bottle, don't give up hope. There's another alternative to your breasts, the cup. Many babies can master a cup by 6 months or so and happily take supplementary feedings from it, and most become skilled enough cup drinkers by the end of the first year to be weaned directly from the breast to the cup whenever the time is right, which saves the extra step of weaning from the bottle. Baby bottle mouth.
I have a friend whose baby's front teeth had to be pulled because of tooth decay. How can I prevent this from happening to my son?
There's nothing cuter than a first grader whose grin reveals an adorable space where his two front teeth used to be. But losing baby teeth early to decay, so-called baby bottle mouth, isn't so cute. It also doesn't just affect a baby's smile. It's painful, can lead to infection if not treated, and can result in problems with eating and speech development. So you're smart to think prevention, and happily, baby bottle mouth is completely preventable. It occurs most often in the first 2 years of life, when teeth are most vulnerable, and most frequently as a result of a baby's falling asleep regularly with a bottle, or much less often, a breast in his mouth. The sugars in whatever beverage he's sipping, formula, or even breast milk, combine with bacteria in his mouth to erode that brand new enamel and decay the teeth. The dirty work is done during sleep, when the production of saliva, which ordinarily dilutes food and drink and promotes the swallowing reflex, slows dramatically. With little swallowing occurring, the last sips baby takes before falling asleep pool in his mouth and cling to his teeth for hours. Some babies are more susceptible to baby bottle mouth, because of a genetic predisposition. So if you or your partner gets lots of cavities, that might put your little one at greater risk. That said, any baby can get tooth decay in those first precious pearlies under the right, or in this case, the wrong conditions, to avoid baby bottle mouth. Once your baby's first teeth come in, don't put him to bed for the night or down for a nap with a bottle of formula or breast milk. Give the bottle before you put him down, and if it's nighttime, brush his teeth after the feed. If he takes a bottle to bed, fill it with water only, which won't hurt his teeth, and if it's fluoridated, will help strengthen them. Avoid juice in bottles altogether. Use bottles for feeds, not for pacifying. All day nipping, crawling around with a bottle, or always having it handy for sips while playing can be as harmful to the teeth as nighttime sucking. Bottles should be considered part of a meal or snack, and like these, should routinely be given in the appropriate setting, your arms, a baby seat, a high chair, or other feeding chair, and at appropriate times. Skip juice until after your baby's first birthday. And if you do serve juice after that, dilute it at least half and half with water. Avoid drinks with sugar added, such as cranberry juice cocktail, fruit punches, or fruit drinks. Drop the bottle at 12 months, as recommended by the AAP. Whatever goes for bottles goes for sippy cups as well, which also allow fluids to pool in a baby's mouth. So set similar limits with sippies. Straw cups or regular cups, as they're introduced, are a better dental bet. While baby bottle mouth is far less common among breastfed babies, be wary of all-night nipping at the breast, too, once teeth arrive. Brushing baby's teeth.
My baby just got her first tooth. The doctor said I should start brushing it now, but that seems silly.
Those tiny pearls that bring so much pain before they arrive and so much excitement when they first break through the gums are going to fall out during the early and mid-school years to be replaced by permanent teeth. So why take good care of them now? For several very good reasons. Since they hold a place for the permanent teeth, decay and loss of those first teeth can deform the mouth permanently. Not to mention that your baby will need these primary teeth for biting and chewing for many years, so it's important that they're as healthy as can be. Healthy teeth are also important for the development of normal speech. Finally, and probably most important, getting your baby in the brushing habit early will make it second nature by the time that second set of teeth comes in. The first teeth can be wiped clean with a damp gauze pad or washcloth, or a tooth wiper finger brush designed for infants, or you can brush them with an infant toothbrush. Less is more when it comes to traditional bristle brushes. Choose one with no more than 3 rows of very soft bristles, and swap for a new one when it gets rough around the edges, which will happen pretty quickly if baby likes to chomp down during brushing. Or opt for a flexible brush with silicone bristles. These are gentler, more durable, and offer soothing gum massage during teething bouts. They're also dishwasher safe, so they're easier to keep clean. Some come with a wide handle or a silicone shield to keep baby from pushing the brush too deep into her mouth. Aim for brushing or wiping teeth after meals and at bedtime. Be gentle since baby teeth are soft and gums are tender. Lightly brush or wipe the front of the tongue, too. Going too far back can trigger gagging, since it can harbor germs. What about toothpaste? According to the American Academy of Pediatric Dentistry, AAPD, it's a good idea to start brushing baby teeth with cavity-preventing fluoride toothpaste right from the start, instead of waiting until age 2, as was previously recommended. But remember that size very much matters. To avoid overdosing a baby or toddler on fluoride, use just a rice grain-sized smear of toothpaste, graduating to a pea-sized blob at age 3. Experts say those quantities probably won't generate mottling of the teeth. Even if your little one swallows some paste, she will. In the second year, you can start trying to teach her the fine art of spitting. Though brushing is the first line of defense against tooth decay, there are other preventive steps you can take to ensure a lifetime of healthy teeth, such as those listed in the previous question, as well as limiting refined carbs, bread, crackers, and teething biscuits made with white flour in your little one's diet, since they quickly turn into sugar on your baby's pearly whites, posing as much of a cavity risk as candy. Whole grains aren't only more nutritious, but they're also better for babies' teeth. Setting limits on bottles and sippy cups. Checking up on your baby's mouth and teeth. The doctor probably does a check at each well baby visit, and unless there are signs of decay or other issues, that's likely all she needs now. The American Academy of Pediatric Dentistry recommends a visit to the dentist, a pediatric dentist, or regular dentist who sees children around the first birthday, and an early visit can help get your little one acclimated to dental checkups. But if all is well and she's getting her teeth checked regularly by her pediatrician, it's fine to hold off until your little one turns 3. Asking about fluoride. Most babies over 6 months will get all the fluoride they need from fluoridated drinking water and a smidge of fluoride toothpaste. If your baby doesn't, ask the doctor about whether you should add a fluoride supplement. Cereal snubbing.
Our baby loves eating vegetables and fruits, but he doesn't seem to like cereal. Does he need to eat cereal?
It's not the cereal that babies need. It's the iron it's fortified with. For the formula-fed set, cereal snubbing isn't an issue, since these babies fill their requirement for this vital mineral every time they drink a bottle. Nursing babies, however, need another source of iron once they've reached the 4-month mark. Fortunately, while fortified baby cereals are a very popular alternative source of iron, at least among the majority of beginning eaters and their parents, they're not the only one. Breastfed cereal spurners can easily fill their requirement with an iron supplement. And before you close the pantry door on all cereal, you might want to try offering baby another variety that you haven't introduced yet. Barley, perhaps, or oat. It's possible that his more adventurous taste buds naturally prefer a slightly stronger taste. Rice is definitely the blandest of the bunch. Whatever cereal you choose, whole grain is the best bet nutrition-wise and tastier, too. Or consider mixing a small amount of cereal with one of the fruits he enjoys. No need to sweeten the cereal deal with fruit, however, for a baby who already enjoys it straight up.
Iron. It's elementary. Thanks to iron-fortified formula in baby cereals, as well as recommendations that breastfed babies get daily iron supplements, anemia, a low supply of protein in the red blood cells, isn't very common. Only 4 to 12% of babies become anemic in the first year. But because the only way to diagnose the condition in babies is with a blood test, the AAP recommends that babies get tested between 9 and 12 months and between 6 and 9 months for premature infants who are at higher risk for anemia because they didn't have time before birth to lay down sufficient reserves. Full-term babies are generally born with stores of iron built up during the last few months of pregnancy that carry them for the first few months of life. After that, as babies continue to require the mineral in large quantities to help expand their blood volume to meet the demands of rapid growth, they need a source of iron in the diet, such as iron-fortified formula for bottle-fed babies or iron-fortified baby cereal. And though breastfeeding exclusively for the first 4 to 6 months is considered the best way to nourish your baby, and the iron in breast milk is very well absorbed, breastfeeding alone does not ensure adequate iron intake after 4 months, which is why supplementation is recommended at least until iron-rich foods are introduced into the diet. Keep in mind that though your baby will be tested for iron deficiency anemia, it's important you take steps to help prevent it. The blood test isn't always perfect, so try the following. Be sure that if your baby is bottle-fed, he or she is getting a formula fortified with iron. Be sure that if your baby is breastfed, he or she is getting an iron supplement after 4 months, and at least until iron-rich foods are introduced and eaten regularly. As your baby increases his or her intake of solids, be sure to include foods rich in iron, preferably served up with foods rich in vitamin C to boost absorption.
A vegetarian or vegan diet.
We're vegans and plan to raise our daughter the same way. Can our diet provide enough nutrition for her?
Your little sprout can grow up to be just as healthy as any milk-drinking or meat-eating tot, and with the right food choices, maybe even healthier. Just remember to breastfeed your baby. Continuing to breastfeed for at least a year if possible will ensure that your infant gets all the nutrients she needs for the first 6 months and most of what she needs for the first year, assuming you're getting all the nutrients you need, including folic acid and vitamin B12 in a supplement to produce high-quality breast milk. If you're not breastfeeding, be certain that the soy formula you choose is one recommended by your baby's doctor. Supplement. Check with your baby's doctor to see whether your baby should be getting any additional vitamin supplements above the ones recommended for all babies. Be selective. Serve only whole grain cereals, breads, rice, and other grains once your baby